Chapter 16. We March. They returned a few hours before dawn. Vedea was standing in an empty watchtower that overlooked the recently repaired northern wall. Hands clasped in front of her, she gazed out into the darkness of the wild. Three figures approached the town in the distance, visible for a fleeting few seconds as they crested a high ridge before becoming lost in the mist-flooded valleys. A white veil lay heavy across the land, like a belt of low cloud refusing to rise or dissipate. The rugged geography of Aegon undulated beneath. The low hills drowned in the mist, grey islands mostly subsumed by a white ocean. But the lower tors protruded, their lower flanks clung to by ghostly tendrils, as if something were trying to drag itself up from the abyss below. It was peaceful, she reflected. The Imperium had so little natural wilderness left, and that which did still exist was either toxic wasteland, rad desert, or the blighted plains of an overtaxed agri-world. Mankind had left its mark on every scrap of earth, and had saturated it with industry or left it desolated by war. The only lands and worlds that remained untamed now were, of course, inimical to human life, which made Aegon only more anomalous.
A miracle that we ever lasted this long, she said to herself.
Who's lasted?
Asked Rhida, blowing on her cupped hands to warm them. She joined Vedea half an hour ago, and the two of them had shared a companionable silence. She was worried about Geraint. Vedea could tell from the tight set of her lips and the faraway look in her eyes. That drive, that certainty Vedea had seen on the Emperor's will, it wavered in the face of Rhida's new reality. Labourers toiled below, making good the stone they had laid and the reinforcing braces they had placed according to Sergeant Fenian's instructions. A guard patrolled the rampart, though it was threadbare on account of the fact that Faradim had few soldiers left who could still carry a spear or sword. The war against the orcs had bled them almost dry.
Mankind,
Vedea answered at length. She pulled the furs around her shoulders tighter. A harsh wind was blowing, and it wailed and whipped around the tower's summit. It was cold up here, but it had a stunning view of most of the city and the surrounding lands.
Something ails this place, said Rhida,
pulling her cloak around her body so it didn't blow open again. Vedea framed a sad smile.
I was only just thinking of how beautiful it was. Stark, but beautiful.
It's in the air, Vedea,
Rhida replied. She sniffed, taking in a long draught.
Can't you smell that?
The stench had begun to emanate in the wake of the battle against the Greenskins, possibly a pungent reminder of their spore. All the corpses, both human and orc, had been taken from the city and burned, but the evidence of the dead had a tendency to linger.
I would say it's death, but that would be overly poetic. And yes, the city reeks, and not just literally, but out there is beautiful, so rare and untouched. I had never seen sky before I came to this place. Not really. Not without a thick layer of pollutants hiding the sun. And what do you make of it? It's wide, grey and cold, but at least it's clean. You should bring Vanko up here. The air, stench notwithstanding, might do him some good.
Perhaps,
Rhida replied, and let the word hang for a while.
I don't know what's wrong with him,
she admitted at last.
I had heard there was an explosion, said Vedea,
though she suspected much more than that.
A scratch, nothing more, especially to a man like Vanko. He is troubled. Ever since Barfus's sanctum, something's been off about him.
Off?
Rhida met her questioning gaze.
Like he's a different person.
Vedea became very serious, very quickly.
What are you saying to me, Anna? Do I need to fetch Captain Sicarius? Throw no,
Rhida answered quickly.
I just make time with him, that's all.
Vedea's mood softened again.
This journey has put a great strain upon all of us.
Something had broken in Geraint, and it had left its mark on Rhida too.
I think he saw something. Saw? In the eye. Barfus's eye. Everyone else who looked in that eye is either dead or went insane and then died.
I can see why you'd be concerned, said Vidaya. What was he doing with that grenade? You know about that.
I know explosions don't manifest out of thin air. It was either that or the Medicus needs to exercise better discipline with how she stores her combustible elements. I don't know why he had it or when he took it, but he used it trying to kill the orc battering its way in.
Vidaya nodded. Mentally troubled or not, Vanko Garant was a military man with a military heritage. She couldn't quite believe he would have been so careless with handheld munitions as to injure himself and almost kill the other two people in the room with him.
I can speak to him if you want, Vidaya suggested gently. I have some experience ministering to troubled minds. Perhaps I can help him. Help you both.
Rita seemed to consider that.
Let me talk to him first. See if he'll agree to it. You think he won't? Why is that?
Rita was about to answer when the blaring of horns sounded across the city, signalling the return of the scouts.
Scipio and Vandius are back, she muttered,
briefly forgetting Rita. From her excellent vantage in the tower, Vidaya could see the main gate, where three figures waited to be reunited with their brothers. They stood in a row, a few feet between each of them, Sicarius in the middle, with Dacius and Fenian left and right of him. Their ragged cloaks stirred lightly in the breeze, but did little to hide the battle scarring on their armour. They might not be from this place, this time, but they had the look of well-seasoned medieval knights. She feared for them, then. These three, though soon to be five, who would march out and face the horde. They would do it because honour and duty demanded it. They had made their oaths, kneeling in darkness, a sword hilt pressed to their foreheads, not only to the people of Faradim, but to each other. A space marine would rather die than break his vow. The wilderness would succumb again, Vidaya knew, drowned in blood and churned underfoot. No place was ever sacrosanct. Peace would surrender itself to war, and so the wheel turned ever onwards. She trembled, wiping an errant tear that had run unchecked, chilling her skin as it dried in a salty tract. Across the courtyard, she saw the Baron watching from a high parapet. He hadn't seen Vidaya, or she was beneath his concern, but he watched the Ultramarines closely. His adviser, the vizier, stood behind him, content to be in the noble's shadow. Unlike the baron, who wore a thick furred cloak to ward off the cold, the vizier had only a thin robe, but gave no outward sign of discomfort. He had several layers of fat, however, which likely offered some insulation. Several townsfolk had gathered to see the knights off, or see them arrive, depending on whose point of view you had. They carried garlands of wild flowers and held close their children, who looked on with awe at the warriors. None of the usual terror or religious fervour pervaded here. The reaction of the crowd was as if to cheer on the champions about to risk their lives to rid the common folk of tyranny and fear.
"For they shall know no fear," said Vidaya,
repeating the old aphorism and thinking on how in less enlightened times it would be easy to consider them as heroes, and not the scarcely human demigods she knew. To see a space marine meant death. As an imperial citizen, you should never wish for it. Seldom they were truly liberators. They were bred to kill, and they did it ferociously well. Sicarius had stepped forwards to meet Vorilenus and Vandius. He greeted them warmly. The old castellan, Scarfell, nearly fell off his horse, and Vidaya briefly considered he must have ridden hard and all night to return so quickly. The two Adeptus Astartes barely looked fatigued at all. They exchanged a few words, Sicarius then turning to Scarfell, a reassuring hand upon his shoulder. He was sending the castellan back. The gesture was heartening, but it was really a facsimile of compassion. It also meant one thing. The Knights of Macragge would fight the orcs alone. They didn't linger. Scarfell's sentimentality wasted on them as he watched them depart into the mist, and then, like the low hills, they were suddenly gone.
"Do you think they'll come back?" asked Rita. "I have never known a fight that the Adeptus Astartes cannot win. With bolters and chainswords, perhaps, with powered warplate and gunships. They have swords and lumpen armour. They are also sons of Gilliman, and that's ingrained. Five against throne knows how many. My point still stands. They'll die before letting even one greenskin live. And if that happens..."
Vidaea regarded the Baron. He was no longer looking north, and instead had turned his attention southwards. She couldn't see what had caught his interest, not at first. Then a handful of mounted figures emerged through the white fog. At their head, the Baron's henchmen. The grim cast of the warrior's face, the way he rode hard across the rugged landscape, bothered Vidaea. He looked scared.
"I didn't know scouts had been dispatched southwards," said Rita,
following Vidaea's eye to the returning hunting party.
"Nor did I," Vidaea replied.
Rita frowned, narrowing her eyes at the chronicler.
"Are you worried?" "I am. You should get Vanko. Now, Anna."
She was already running by the time Vidaea had turned around.